You're entering the MSP Zone, a podcast for the managed services community, covering news, analysis, and interviews from around the globe. Elevate your MSP game by staying in the MSP Zone. And now, your host, Charles Weaver.
All right, we are talking about innovation in the managed services profession today. Innovation at the MSP level, innovation at the vendor level. We are all in this together. It's a big ecosystem. It's a big supply chain ecosystem, if you want to look at it like that. And it's always important to have an eye towards what are we doing to push the envelope and push the profession forward. And being three decades into the managed services profession now, it's always a good time to reflect and re-examine. And so I couldn't do this by myself, so I asked a good friend of ours, Jimmy Puckett from Spinnin, an MSP, to come on into the MSP Zone and talk a little bit about what he's doing with his own MSP practice with regards to innovation, helping his customers, and kind of pushing the needle forward in the MSP profession. So, Jimmy, welcome to the MSP Zone.
Thanks, Charles. I'm excited to be here.
All right. For those, you know, people may not. Actually, you're pretty well known in certain circles in the MSP sector, but why don't you give us a little bit of backstory about Spinnin and what you guys are doing there?
Sure. So I actually started the company when I was a student at a university in Georgia, so way back in 97. It's really kind of interesting. We've gotten to a point where some of the people that work for us were not even born when we started the company. So it's kind of wild to watch that progression as I become the old person at the office. But we were essentially two guys on a laptop, and somebody paid us about $700, $800 to build a website. And I thought, this is amazing. And that was the beginning of Spinnin. We started, kind of went out full time in the beginning of 2000. We were, you know, break fix. I had a CPA friend that we would not be where we're at today if it was not for him. His name is Alan Lisher. But anyhow, Alan kept telling us that we were running a YMCA camp and that we needed annuitized revenue. And I was like, I don't even know what annuitized revenue is. And in about 07, we talked a client into paying us $5 a workstation and $25 a server. And so it was like $220 a month. And we thought this was amazing. And that was the beginning of managed services about 07, 06 for us. We actually at the time didn't know that it was called managed services. But that client is actually still with us today. They pay us slightly more than $200 a month. But anyhow, about 2011, the checks that were coming in the mailbox exceeded the bills. And I was like, this is what the accountant was talking about. And so that was a real big moment for us. And so about 11 is when we started researching RMMs and PSAs, because we had a 3-ring binder for every client. We had checkoff lists. So it was like, did you do the backups? Did they do this? And so my team would literally have to go get the binder for every client. And we just couldn't scale it anymore. We started looking. We looked at all the major RMMs at the time. We ended up picking Enable in Central and ConnectWise about 11, 12, somewhere in that era. And so that's been our journey. We're now about 40 people, mostly focused on managed services, while we do have about 20, 25% of our business that is custom software development.
Interesting. I mean, not an uncommon path towards your managed services present day situation. I mean, you know, we hear a lot of MSPs talk about that, and it's kind of an amazing thing to watch an entrepreneur and a company see and try to seek a level of efficiency, and it just naturally settles in managed services. It's kind of an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah.
You've done a couple of really, some people might call it radical, some people might just call it natural evolution, but you've done two things that I want to get to momentarily. One is you recently got rid of like a lot of your customers, which I want to talk to.
Yeah, almost 70. 70%. It's about 70%. Yeah.
Okay. People want to hear about this one. Leading up to that, I know that a lot of MSPs today are being forced with this. People call it the MSP to MSSP migration. I personally, you know, I understand the concept. I understand it as a notion in managed services. I slightly disagree that it's a fundamental business model shift, right? I think of it more as, okay, add new technology, new capabilities, which is what MSPs have been doing since day one.
Yep.
What's your general view about innovation as an MSP owner operator? How do you look at, what does innovation mean to you?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. There's nothing about our business that does not change almost daily, weekly. And so I think if you're looking for a business, or you started doing this expecting this routine, the only routine I think we get to settle in from a managed service provider is change, like embracing change and that sort of thing. And so I think that we're kind of on what I would almost consider the third phase of our type of businesses. Like, you know, initially technology was kind of this mythical thing that people just kind of they didn't understand, and people had their IT person, and, you know, we just kind of did this voodoo. And then it kind of went into this little bit more where people heavily invested and they saw technology. And so kind of version two was this time at which people almost put technology up on this pedestal, and they, you know, it was just like, oh, my technology is better than yours. And it was even senses of pride that sort of thing. And now we're moving on to where technology is actually settling back in the background, and the users, the efficiency, where technology is actually supporting the users, we're kind of on this third phase. And so, you know, as an organization, we've really shifted a lot over the last little bit in really supporting the business, the users, the business cases. And, you know, our clients don't care that we're supporting a server here, a server there. They don't even want to talk to us about the technology. They want to talk to us about the business. And so it's really this really interesting third version of our company of really supporting the user. It's so fun.
Change is your only constant. I've heard that a lot. Yeah, I like that phrase. When you get to a point where 70% of your customers aren't aligned, my words, correct me if I'm wrong, 70% of your customers aren't aligned with what Spinnin is doing or wants to do, walk us through what leads you as an MSP organization up to that point.
Yeah, so about 2019, we were trying to figure out how to take it to that next step, right? And so we invested in service leadership and working with Paul Dipple and Sleek and all that kind of stuff, and it was amazing. But as an organization, we didn't know how to execute, like from an operational perspective. We knew how to take care of the computers, but being managers and business leaders, like it was, we would do all this assessment every quarter, and we would see everything that was wrong with us, but we couldn't find our way out of a wet paper bag. We couldn't get the stuff done. And so it was so frustrating. And we got turned on to EOS, or, you know, Traction, EOS, that sort of thing. And so we started off 2020. We had this plan for the decade. Like, we had it mapped out. We knew exactly what the next 10 years was going to entail, right? I went on this amazing family vacation in 2019. I told my family we're coming back and we're going to grab the bull by the horns in 2020. Of course, life, you know, changed a little bit for all of us. But part of that understanding in the beginning of 2020 is we thought we were standardized. Like, you know, we had all of our clients using the same firewalls, and we had like most everybody on the same antivirus, but we kind of had a good better. And we had, you know, most everybody on the same backup, but we had so many exceptions. And one of the people on my leadership team, I kept saying, oh yeah, we're standardized. And he's like, no, Jimmy, we're not. And it really was a kind of, honestly, kind of a kick in the gut. And we got to looking at it, and, you know, there's about 20, 25 tools that make up a stack of what we do. And we got to looking at it, and there were like 2 to 3. And so there's like 50 to 75 tools that our team needed to be proficient at. And that wasn't scalable. And so we made the decision in 2020. We said, okay, if client A, if that was our parents' business and you were going to inherit it one day, how would you want it set up? Like, what are the tools that you would want in there? And so we started curating that list of those 20, 22 tools, and we picked the list. We said, okay, this is what we want. And we went on a journey. At the time, we had about 230, 240 clients. About 100 of them were reactive hourly people that made up like 20% of our revenue. And then the balance of roughly 150 had varying degrees of managed services contracts, right? We had the typical monitoring only that was supposed to be the beachhead that would open up the door to turn into full managed services. And, you know, we had network only, we had network server, we had network server workstation. And so we sent a letter to all the 100 hourly people and said, hey, look, we enjoyed working with you. This is our new plan. If you would like to talk to us, please do. But we're not your IT company anymore. You need to find somebody else, or you need to meet with somebody. So we just, those 100 were gone one day. So then we went through the 150 contracts and we built this elaborate spreadsheet. And we took all of their costs. Because, you know, there were things that we would sell them that were 3 years. There were things that we would sell them that's a 1 year. There were monthly. And we turned all those numbers into a monthly number for the client. And we gave them essentially a right pocket, left pocket. So we said, okay, yes, your contract with us today is $730. But when you take all these other things that you have to buy and you turn it into a monthly number and then divide it by their users, we actually gave them a effective per user price. And then we gave them the new per user price and we said, okay, look, it's $50 more a user a month, but we're now going to mandate multi-factor. Because at the time we weren't mandating multi-factor, you know? And so there were things that we weren't mandating. And so we went through and we showed them, we're like, okay, you've got a good AV, but we're going to move you to an EDR. And so we showed them the value in that $50 and per user. And difference. And then we sat down with them. We said, look, we've got to transition you by the end of your contract to this new plan, or we got to transition to an IT, new IT company. And it was sad because, you know, some of those people had been with us for 15 years and we loved helping them. But honestly, I think that we were doing them a disservice by allowing them to not have all these things. And so we kicked them on. And some of them are actually starting to come. It's been 2 to 3 years for some of them now. And we actually just signed one of them back up last month. So they went off with a traditional local managed services group, had an average experience, and so we're starting to actually see some of those things come back. So that's kind of our journey.
That's amazing, Jimmy. I mean, first of all, I've heard so many MSPs tell me, oh well, that we have to have, you know, every service discipline we do has to have, you know, half a dozen vendors to support it because, you know, it's options for the customer, or this customer wants to have this vendor. And you stood that theory on its head by saying, look, it's going to cost the MSP a lot to just stay up to date and proficient in each of these tools. It's not possible. It's not scalable. And I think that's a really good argument for that. But you aligned the spin and vision with security and said, look, this is the level set. This is the new normal for IT management. Anything less is not really cutting it. Come along with us or we have to let you go. And I think it's the right move.
Yeah, they're a liability otherwise. Like, I wanted to be able to go to sleep at night. And I'm going to tell one quick story. So we had a business, so it's an attorney's office, and for sake of argument, let's just say they were BillJonesLaw.com, and a person prior to this, a person went out and bought BLLJonesLaw.com, so they replaced the I with a third L. So in the last 3 years, I've had to start wearing reading glasses, so you know this, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference with that I and that L. And, you know, it was a group here in Middle Georgia, and somebody took the time to register a domain and actually infiltrated their law clerk's account and was able to start carrying on a conversation with a person and redirected almost $180,000 in closing money. And that was the moment I was like, although we had been telling them that they weren't doing things right, they were still going to blame us. And so I was like, look, if you're going to blame me, you're going to do it my way. And if you're not going to do it my way, I'm not going to give you the opportunity to blame me. And so that was honestly the moment in about 2019 that we said, you got to go this way or you got to go somewhere else. And they're a client today. So they took the full mill and we tell them how the technology is going to work. And it's been an awesome 4 years since then.
Well, I think any MSP listening who's saying, I wish I had the guts or I wish I had the fortitude to be able to do what you did, I hope they take a page from your playbook, because that's, I think more MSPs probably need to do what you did. You know, maybe it'll come out at 70%, maybe it'll be less, more, who knows. But I think they have to, every MSP's got like one customer that kind of fits what just described. They all have one.
Oh yeah. I gotta say one other thing about that too, just for your audience. We have twice as many end users today that we did when we started this. So when I say we have 70% fewer clients, my team likes to remind me, Jimmy, that sounds like we've got more work to do, but we have almost twice as many users. And so it afforded us the opportunity, because we weren't getting drug around by these annoying, and I don't mean it ugly. Let me back up. When I say annoying, I think that your clients need to be at the same operational maturity you're at. Like wherever your business is from an operational maturity level, if your clients are below that, they're just going to drag you down. Now you can try to help them, and I would encourage trying to help them, but if they won't go, you just can't do anything with it. And so the more, you know, operationally maturity aligned your clients are and your business are, it is magical. But anyhow, we doubled. So it gave us a chance, because we weren't getting drug into these reactive things where people that weren't willing to plan or talk. And it gave us the chance to go out and talk to better yoked or better aligned customers. And we have doubled our, almost doubled, not quite, we've almost doubled our end user count in these 3 years as well.
That's amazing. No, that's proof that it works. It's not, people think about, oh, I'm going to lose the revenue. I know it actually works out. It'll be good.
Yes.
I want to shift to innovation and your vendor partners. I don't want to play favorites. I don't want to, speak ill of any group, but innovation, you're not the first person to mention, as an MSP, hey, we need the right strategic partners who are constantly innovating, because their technology does impact your ability to deliver managed services to your customers. Everybody knows this. Walk us through, you just recently had a product change. I'd like you to also walk us through what brought you to the point of saying what every other MSP says, well, take a look at other platforms, look at features. Is it better than what we have? Why is it better? Why is it not better? But you actually took it the next step and said, all right, we're going to make a decision here. What drove that? And again, I don't want to put you in the spot of naming companies. Sure. I think it's more the process that I'm interested in.
So I am going to bring back up Traction for one quick second. So I think the whole concept around EOS and Traction and helping us get focused and understanding what we wanted to do was what put us in a position where we couldn't afford to not make the decisions. Like, I think a lot of times we want to make these decisions, but we don't have something tangible that we can say, look, these things are being held back. Like it converted it from being, intuition and just frustration, and being able to point to specific items and parts of our 1 year plan, our 3 year vision, our 10 year big hairy goal. It just put us in a position where we had no choice but to make the change.
I have a quick question, Jimmy. So what you're saying is, and this is also for my benefit in the audience, you're saying that you went maybe on service line or product line and said, these are the things that we need this service or product line to do over the next 5 years. And let's start looking at our technology stack and making sure that they are in alignment with our goals. Am I getting that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause just a, I guess a quick thing on that. So, with EOS, you set up this 10-year big hairy goal. Then you set up this kind of 3-year vision. It's like, okay, what will the company look like in 3 years? And then you say, what are we going to do the next 12 months to get us to that 3-year? And so by doing such, it puts you in a position where you're really focusing on what's real important. There's an author. I'm gonna chase another squirrel. I'm sorry. There's an author, a guy named Mike McCallowitz, that puts out a book called Profit First, Fix This Next. And so he talks in a book called Fix This Next. He talks about how a lot of times people work on what's apparent, not what's vital. And so EOS gives you a framework that allowed us to stop working and worrying about what's just apparent, like who's on fire today, who's screaming and hollering about something, and what's the most vital thing that we need to do to hit our 1-year plan. And so bringing it back to a second ago with what you're asking us, by knowing what we need to accomplish in the next 12 months, it gives us the ability to evaluate our stack, our partners, our team, our processes, and say, are these things going to empower us today to be where we want to be? And so as we assess our vendors, there were some that unfortunately were not empowering us to be where we wanted to be in 12 months. And so then it became a no-brainer. It's like it's no longer a choice. Like, are we going to change? It's how are we going to change and when are we going to do it kind of thing. Does that help?
It does. Do you communicate those things back to your vendor partners and say, you know, we have a 10-year plan. This is where we're headed. Are we heading the same direction? Like, are you having that level of conversation with your?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I think it is so critical. I know a lot of times we complain about the vendor doesn't do this or they're not going fast enough. And it's really funny because there are a lot of times that we get frustrated with our clients. It's like, well, the client didn't tell us that they're moving buildings. The client didn't tell us that they were doing an acquisition. But as the vendor, we didn't ask them either, right? And so it's really easy for us to blame the client and say, well, you should have told us that you were doing this in 6 months or whatever. And we always say, man, I wish the client would tell us this stuff. And so we treat our relationship with our main vendors very much like we wanted our clients to treat us. And so we are under their feet. And we do it, we try to do it in a way that we're not just, oh gosh, it's Jimmy calling me again. I'm going to ignore him. To more so, okay, hold on. I want to pay attention because he's probably seeing things that maybe others aren't willing to tell us or they're not telling us in a way. And it has vastly improved our ability to relate and talk to them. And I've been privileged to be on a lot of panels with some of these partners to even influence some of these directions over the next bit. So one, I cannot, that is critical.
Well, I mean, in fairness, you're giving them something of incredible value, assuming they're listening, which is you're giving them roadmap. You're giving them roadmap development. You're giving them innovation. You're giving them ideas that can make them profitable and successful, which will also make you profitable and successful. So you have vendors that you're very happy with, I think. Yeah. You know, I heard this from an MSP last week, and they said, because they were talking about the same issue of switching, and one did it, and I think they regretted it. I'm not going to say what vendor they used or switched to or what service category it was in, but they did it, and I could hear them regretting it. And I said, well, why did you change in the first place? Well, we thought we needed this feature, and maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but they realized, well, we lost a few other features because the newer technologies maybe don't have that legacy track record of they haven't been around like some of the legacy players have.
Yeah. I would dare say that maybe they were focused on what was apparent, not what was vital. So I cannot stress enough Mike's book, Fix This Next, is such an amazing book. But so let me tell you our journey on the PSA and kind of how we got there. Is that a good transition?
Absolutely.
To kind of that part? Yes. Yeah, so when we made the decision to go with Enable in about 2012, we actually did not have a PSA. So we had ConnectWise. No, sorry. We had QuickBooks and a bunch of Excel spreadsheets and that sort of thing. And so we picked the RMM, and then we actually went with Autotask for about 3 months. And it was, at the time, it was hosted only. There were some things that I was having issue with trying to do some reporting. And so we in the 11th hour, we actually switched to ConnectWise. So December, we were supposed to go live January 1, I think, of like 2012, or maybe it's January 1 of 2013. It's all blurry. But anyhow, we were supposed to go live January 1, and it was like Christmas week, and I pulled a plug. I'm like, yeah, no, we're going to go this way instead. And so it delayed us about 30 days. But all the hard lifting was actually just getting our data organized, because at the time, our data was everywhere.
Yeah.
So we had all of our data cleaned up. We loaded in on a self-hosted version of ConnectWise, and we would not be where we're at today without ConnectWise. Like, it at the time, it was exactly what we needed. I am so thankful for the structure that it gave us, and it was an absolute godsend. It really, really helped us in a lot of ways. At the time, you know, we were doing per device billing, so we had awesome integration with InCentral and ConnectWise that would, you know, bill X dollars per network device and Y dollars per virtual server, and it was absolutely phenomenal. And so bringing it up today, so we see that as more and more things become automated, as we shift more and more to supporting the end user and not the technology, we knew that we had to invest very, very heavy in automation. So one of the things that we did in 2020 is that we hired our first full-time automator. They don't do any tickets. They just do automation in our RMM. Like, we've always written a lot of automations. We've had a lot, but it was nobody's job. So we would do it when we had time, and we were not getting as far as we needed. And we knew by looking at our 3-year and our 1-year, we had to invest heavy in automation. So we did that. Well, along that journey, about 2022, you know, we're looking at being able to use our data in ways to make decisions that would empower us to do things faster, more efficient, so that we can get a better ratio of endpoints per technician. And not because we're trying to overwork our technicians, but because if we can get that density and still keep customer satisfaction up, then we can pay our people more than anybody else can pay their people. And so that was kind of part of the idea. And so as we were evaluating our PSA tool, we needed one that would be extremely open, have unbelievable integrations, and we wanted one that would empower us to collaborate across all kinds of systems. And so we started looking at a bunch of different ones, and in the end, we ended up picking Halo. We did a proof of concept with them middle-ish end of last year. And of course, my team was scared to death, right? Like, we've got
of changing
10, 12 years.
What was the fear from? Just legacy habit?
Well, one, we're all IT nerds. And so it is kind of funny. Like, you know, we talk about initially the only constant is change. But sometimes we also, especially in the technical world, we like our things being in boxes and things being familiar. And so part of it was just change. And then part of it is, you know, there's that saying that you didn't get here overnight, so you're not going to get out of here tomorrow, you know? And so if you added up the incremental time over the last 12 years that we had put in configuring all these little pieces and parts of our PSA, and think about just doing a big bang and swapping that over a night, it was just like, this is an insurmountable task. And so and of course they thought we were just kind of jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. And so, you know, they're like, this is just a flashy thing, Jimmy, you're just excited about it. But I knew that we needed the data. I knew we needed the integrations. I knew that we needed to be making decisions. And I didn't like the closed ecosystem feel that was transpiring inside of our existing RMM. And so I wanted one that saw our data as our data. And I honestly, quite frankly, I didn't want to ask permission to have an API key. It's my data. And so so we made a decision to jump.
Fair enough. I respect that. And that helps. I think part of what makes people hearing you, certainly me hearing you talk through that evolutionary process, is that you knew what you were looking for. You weren't just blindly saying, I need to see if the grass is really greener on the other side. I think a lot of MSPs take demos all the time because they're just seeing, is it better? But they're not maybe following your advice of, are we tracking it? Do you actually know what color of grass, green grass you want?
That's right.
You know, so you can be, you know, really sure. Am I getting it? Yeah. So you go through the process, you swap out a PSA. It's not an easy thing to do, but you did it. And are you happy? I got to ask.
Oh, we're sad. It is absolutely amazing. Now it's got its problems. Yep. And it's got its challenges. And I mean, like, one of the things that's so annoying that it's just mind-boggling, but we use deferred revenue in projects to really kind of even out our, you know, our cash flow, because, you know, I can remember back in the early days before I even knew what deferred revenue was, it'd be like, we made $50,000 this month. And it's like, no, you have a $45,000 liability and you made $5,000, you know, but anyhow, so we use deferred revenue and there are some pretty significant limitations right now in Halo on, I hate to call it advanced accounting, but they do. So some of the kind of a little bit more advanced things like deferred revenue. Now, the fun part is their product team. I don't see how they put out features at a speed that I have never, ever seen. Like the change log is just mind-boggling. Like, I don't know how they keep up with it. And so they're working on it. We've been having great conversations with them about it. That's one thing that was a little bit of a shock. We're actually still doing our accounting over in the old PSA. And we synchronize some stuff right now. Our goal is to kind of keep that going through the end of the year, because we were in the middle of some pretty other big projects. And so dealing with the accounting towards the end of the year just made a better sense for us.
So I'd like, if you have the time, I'd like to get your thoughts and opinions on artificial intelligence, because you've talked a lot about automation, and yeah, whether you're on the IBM kind of machine learning kick or you're fully into the Google AI, we don't even know how this stuff works.
Yeah.
I can't believe they actually said that.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about AI as applied to the modern day managed services profession?
Loaded question. I think any business is not... No, yeah. I think anybody that is not trying to figure out how to use it today will not be in existence in 3 to 5 years. Like, I think it is the single most important, I mean, that's a little bit of a stretch, but I think it's the single most transformational, most important thing that I have ever seen in my 50 years of existence. Like, I can remember in the mid-90s, when I first built a website for somebody, and I was going to, back when you actually went to bookstores and they had all the technology books.
Oh yeah.
Like, I can remember going and, you know, I would buy these, like, you know, sans teach yourself something in 21 days and all these kinds of things. I always refused to buy the dummies book because it just mentally, I just said, I can't align myself there. But anyhow, I remember ingesting all this HTML stuff in the mid-90s, early 90s, and I missed an opportunity, I think, to do some stuff at that point in time. This moment right now with what we have with access to some of these tools is more transformational, I think, than the internet stuff was in the mid-90s. Like, I think sitting down and talking with your clients, like, we're part of our QBRs, like, you know, we go through the stuff, but we are showing clients use cases. We're making sure that they're thinking about it. Because I honestly think part of this, you know, version 3 of a managed services company, like, part of our next version is going to be helping our clients be more efficient in their business with the technology, not just, oh, I can't print today. It's going to be, how do I make business decisions using technology off of my data? And so I think we're really going to be in a position over the next several years to have to help these clients actually leverage this technology. But I can give you some examples of how we're using it, what we're doing, if it works time-wise,
yes,
if that's
absolutely
good for you. So our initial kind of beginning was like everybody else. We would open up, you know, ChatGPT, we'd paste stuff in, we'd make stuff sound better, you know, we would brainstorm with it, and that was great. But about 6 months ago now, we actually integrated all of our incoming tickets through OpenAI, the backend API for ChatGPT, because, you know, our clients will send us a help desk ticket, right? It'll say, internet's down, computer issue. And if you think about it, you're looking in your PSA, it doesn't matter how great it is with workflows and all that kind of stuff, but you're looking at a board and, you know, you've got a column that's the summary, and you've got one that says computer issue, one that says internet down, and then you got one that's like, you know, cannot run payroll. Well, of course, we're going to read the thing that's apparent, you know, and maybe one of those other two things was more vital, but you have to click on it. You have to open it up. You have to read it. You have to think. And so we had our triage team would, you know, manually summarize all that stuff. And so the first thing we did is we took the summary of a ticket, sent it through AI, and asked it to write us a 7 to 10 word. I'm sorry, I said summary. The initial description, we would send that to OpenAI and ask it to write us a 7 to 10 word summary, and rewrote all of our summaries in the help desk. And it was so amazing. It gave us back 2 to 3 minutes per ticket. And if you think about how many tickets that you go through that have bad titles and that kind of thing, and also like when we do our QBRs, we print that quarter's last, you know, critical and high tickets. And no one wants to sit there and go read all of them. But if they've got a good summary, then when we're planning for that conversation with that client, then we're like, oh, that's interesting. I should dig into that better. And that alone saved us insane amounts of money and time. And it cost me a nickel per API call and a $13 a month Microsoft Power Automate license. So it cost me about $25 a month. To give us back, we did the math. It's about 41% of an employee we got back, just by streamlining, that process. Amazing stuff.
I mean, that's so, it sounds so simple though, I mean, because people don't think of, are we going to use AI to rewrite a ticket summary? But
yes, yes,
it works.
It does. People are going after, because AI is so big and it's so amazing, people are only thinking about like these amazing solutions. And I think they have a failure to launch. And, you know, if you would sit down and say, OK, what are the things that we spend a lot of time on that's maybe not glorious, that is mundane? Those are unbelievable, powerful things. That's part of the stuff we're sitting down with our clients right now, giving them use cases like that, trying to get them to think, because as a managed services provider, if you give a company back 41% of an employee, they're never going to fire you. Like, yeah. You've added more value to their business than anything you can imagine doing. And so I cannot stress enough, you know, how important it is to be having those business type conversations with the clients.
Well, Jimmy, we're at the end of our time, and I can't thank you enough for sharing kind of, you know, a lot of the deep secrets of how, you know, you as an MSP do what you do. And I think there's some lessons learned, lessons available to learn for any MSP out there listening, whether you're looking to innovate, you're looking to tackle things like AI, and where do we start? You know, well, Jimmy just gave you a good place to start. And I want to close with this. It's listening to you. I've heard a lot of MSPs who you can tell they're struggling. You can tell maybe they feel like the good days are mostly behind them. Listening to you, there's a bright future that is completely up to you to create. I mean, you paint a very promising picture of the future and the role of the MSP. At least that's my perspective.
Yeah, I appreciate that. There's another book. I'm kind of a bit of a book nerd, but there's a book called The Gap and the Gain, I believe is what it's called. The Gap and the Gain. It is a phenomenal book to try to stay focused on the gains that you made and not get wrapped up in the gap and feel like we're just always underwater.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. We'll try to find those links and put them in the show notes for everybody. Jimmy Puckett from Spinnin', thank you for hanging out with us on the MSP Zone. Come back.
Yeah, Charles, thank you.
All right. Until next time, folks.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a like. Make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so you will get notified when future episodes are released. We will see you next time in the MSP Zone.